So it is Mother's Day. It is celebrating and observing the divine feminine and all. So how many people here are moms? Raise your hands. My God, look at all these moms. Oh my God, it's lovely. How many grandmas? Grandmas? Yeah, look at, oh my God, we have tons. What about great grandmas? Great grandmas? No, you're not. I know that there are some around. Great grandmas, Lou. I know, Lou, you are. Absolutely. Yep. So how many are moms to children they didn't give birth to? Right? There's a lot of those. Absolutely. And what about dads who are moms? Right? There are dads who are moms. Absolutely. And you know what Robert Heinlein said? He said, being a mother is an attitude. It is not a biological relation. It is. And I love that. So how many are moms to an idea? How many has given, right? Now, come on, all of your hands should be up now. Everybody has given birth to an idea, right? Giving birth to a divine idea. All right, how many of us had a mom? Come on, everybody's hand should be up now. How many of us were born? Yay, okay. Well, there you go. Everybody's hand should be up at some point. Mother is the giver of life. It is an archetypal feminine aspect, really is what it is. And remember, the archetype has no form of its own. It simply acts as an organizing principle regarding things that we see in the physical world. So it's not as much an image as it is an identifier. You know, an idea. So mother is an identifier of the feminine aspect. It is one of the identifiers of the feminine archetype. And it is an interesting one. The mother as archetype is really an interesting one. It's like, you know, what do you do for a living? I make people. That is my superpower. You know, it is. It's a godlike quality, right, in the physical world. And honest to God, it's not for everybody. It is just not for everybody, you know. So this gives us a time to honor that part of ourselves, the creative part that gives birth to. You know, and this month we are discussing the spiritual laws in action. And, you know, as I remember, moms were kind of like spiritual laws in action, weren't they? I mean, mine was. I can only speak for myself. But, you know, she taught me about the law of cause and effect. If you do that one more time, you know what's going to happen to you. You know, it was like, okay, I got it. What else? Karma, the law of karma. She always used to say, you know, when you grow up, you're going to have kids and they're going to be just like you. Those are moms, you know, spiritual laws in action. Last week we talked about obeying the law, and so this week we're going to talk about breaking the law. And you heard from those quotes, you know, from Ernest Holmes that we don't really break the law. We can't really break the law, but we do transcend it. Ernest Holmes said, daily we must reverse our position in the law. That's what he said. And that is, regardless of what the trending human race thought is, in the day or the year or whatever, regardless of what that trending human race thought is, we must reverse our position in that. We must stand in the truth always. Because what we know is that human race consciousness is not always truth. It's kind of the facts. It's what's going on in the moment. It's what's going on in government. It's what's going on in our personal lives or our professional lives in the moment. But it may not be absolute truth. So Ernest Holmes always talked about reverse our position in the law. If human thinking is trending with fear, right, or lack or limitation, we have to reverse that position. We need to stand in love, and we need to stand in abundance, and we need to stand in freedom, and we need to know the truth in the face of all of these facts that may be flowing into our surrounding area. Knowing the truth, saying our affirmative prayers, doing our affirmations, doing our meditation in the morning, and then Ernest Holmes says, and then going about your day kind of breaking the law by telling your same old, tired, worn-out story of how it's happening to you, how they're doing it to you, how all this stuff is going on, you know, that's kind of breaking the law. You know what I mean? You cannot stand in the truth in 5 minutes in the morning and then go about the whole rest of the day denying the truth and expect any of that good to manifest In our lives, we can't. You know that idea of, Paul, what is it you say? What the three things that begin to stink after a couple of days? Fish, uninvited house guests, and your story. You know, it just stinks. So what we need to do is we need to get a new story, you know? We need to have a new narrative. But we have a tendency to do that, don't we? We pray in the morning, we get ourselves all prayed up, we meditate, we sit with our meditative coffee cup. I've got one, have you got one? Meditative coffee cup. And we do our prayer work, and we do our affirmations, and we do our meditations, and we're like right there, we know our oneness, we love everybody, we go out, we hit the freeway, and then, right? All of a sudden, things change. We can wind up getting caught up in the narrative, caught up in the lack, in the limitation, in the competition, in the, you know, things that go on in the world, and we forget our truth. So Ernest Holmes said that, you know, we can't just do that in the morning and then go over the rest of our day forgetting it. We have to pray in the morning, then we have to go to work, and then we have to continue to stand in the truth of who we are. We cannot deny all the good that we just affirmed and then expect answered prayer. Does that make sense? Ernest Holmes said this. He said, we cannot get over the law of cause and effect. We can get over or transcend any particular use of it. We will not be breaking the law when we do this. We will be merely causing it, because of our different attitudes, to react differently. Does that make sense? So I talked about, you know, causing it to break the law, but we really don't. What we do is we break our use of it. We have a new thought. The law isn't broken. The law does what it does. It outpictures our predominant thoughts, but we swap out those thoughts for other thoughts, right? And then the law will immediately go to work on that. But then what happens? Then we get on the freeway, or then we go to work, or then we start, you know, dealing with those people that we'd really, really not deal with, right? And then we start thinking other thoughts. And then the law wants to go to work out picturing those thoughts. And so now it's something totally different. And so now it starts working in the opposite direction. It's exhausting if you think about it. Ernest Holmes said, it stands to reason. This is in Living the Science of Mind. It stands to reason if the law knows about us only what we know about ourselves, and that if what we hold true about life itself furnishes us with our mental patterns, then the law knows about us only what we believe to be true about life. So if we believe we're in alignment with all of those qualities of God, and we know that that is the truth of us, and we walk around in that, we have reversed our position in the law, we walk around like that all day long, we know that the law begins to outpicture as that in our lives. And then as soon as we shift and forget, get caught up in the trivial details of life, get caught up in the facts about what's going on, and then start affirming our limitations, then the law goes to work on that as well. Does that make sense? Exactly what happened. So this is why it is so important for us to hold firm in our beliefs. We must be consistent in our thinking, in our affirmations, in our prayers, and even in our idle thoughts, right? Idle thoughts, you know, those thoughts that just float through while you're thinking you're not thinking? You're thinking. Even, I think the Course in Miracles had said, right, there's no such thing as idle thoughts. And, you know, thoughts are things, thoughts that build your whole entire life. They can't be called idle. We believe that thoughts are things. That's what Ernest Holmes said. And we dwell in them all the time. Isn't your mind always narrating, right? It's always narrating your life. So we dwell in those thoughts with regularity, and those thoughts will return over and over. Those are the ones that are most likely going to manifest, right? So, ugh. What are you thinking on a regular basis, you know? If you're dwelling in the lack or the limitation or what you read in the newspaper that morning, please don't read the newspaper. Don't read the newspaper in the morning, and don't watch the news right before you go to bed. That's the stuff of nightmares, you know? You don't want to do that. You want to pray, you know, morning, evening, pray. Bookend your day with those positive feelings and intentions, those positive thoughts. Those are the ones that are most likely to outpicture. And when we do that, when we adopt that new thought and stick with it, right? So it becomes a predominant thought, then those are the ones that begin to outpicture. We kind of break the law, but really what we're doing is we're breaking the same old mold, right? We are breaking that old thought pattern, that old picture that's in our minds, and then we wind up getting new pictures and then new manifestations. We break the mold that the law fills so that we can be provided with a new mold of acceptance, so that the law then can fill that, resulting in new manifestations, different things. But we have to provide the new thought. That's why they call this teaching new thought. Get it? I love it. So simple. But until we provide the new thought, the law remains inactive. It's like, it just sits there. It has no volition. It has no will of its own. Nothing new comes into being until we decide it's possible, until we have chosen, until we set our intention. And this is how we stretch and grow. Because we can't experience anything new until it comes into our mind that we can experience something new. And then we have to set that intention, and we have to know it and love it and embrace it and feel it before the law can then go to work demonstrating it. This is how we stretch and grow. This is how things get invented. This is how we attempt to do things we've never done before, right? We set our intention to experience something we've never done before. We have a new thought, and that new thought breaks the existing law, if you will, and we get to experience something bigger or better or brighter or grander. Does that make sense? Right? But it has to start in mind. Everything begins with the thought. Again, going back to Ernest Holmes in Living, he said, again, we must remember the law knows neither big or little. It only knows to do. Because the word sets the law in motion, and because we speak the word, we know we can use the law. As for universal as the law is, it is also particularized through us. It specializes itself at our request, and it flows through our thought into performance. In making practical use of this, we must realize our word is law. And whatever we believe and embody with feeling is really what winds up out picturing. And the only way we change our life is by picturing something greater than we have ever experienced before. Even if we've never experienced it, we can imagine it. And that's what Emile Coué said, right? That imagination is greater than our intellect. Because that is what stirs the law to go to work so that we can then experience something we've never experienced. We can break that, you know, pattern of monotonous regularity that Ernest Holmes talked about. And we can manifest something we've never had before just by thinking it, knowing it, believing it, feeling it. So since it's Mother's Day, I thought it would be really, really good to take a look at some of those lawbreakers. I just finished rereading this book I bought several years ago. It's called 4,000 Years of Uppity Women. Oh my God. So going back into history, there are women who broke the laws. They did things they weren't supposed to do. They weren't allowed to do. They said women couldn't do back in those days. They broke the law in their own consciousness first. And then they were able to demonstrate, right? Because everything happens in consciousness first. So here's some of those women who broke those laws. None of this you learned in school, by the way. You know? Anyway. Okay, being a scribe in ancient Mesopotamia was like being a lawyer. It was really highly regarded, and it was a male-dominated field. What a surprise. Okay, so Amat Mamu was a woman in the field for over 40 years. 1700s BCE. She was so good, in fact, at what she did that she began to train and hire other women. They had a whole women law firm. I love it. Long time ago, long career, treasure trove of legal documents and laundry lists and school curriculum. She wrote and recorded all kinds of things, business deals. Did you know there was a woman pharaoh? Ha ha, there was a woman pharaoh. I can't pronounce her name, but here it is. Hatshepsut, around 1518, thank you, BCE. She went from being queen to being pharaoh after her husband kicked the bucket. She ruled for 22 years. Right, these are things that you have to have a consciousness for before you can do them. There were ancient women historians and philosophers and athletes. And fast forward to the Middle Ages, there was a Sufi poet, woman poet, Viking ship captains. Right, I love it. You know, and Eleanor of Aquitaine and Joan of Arc. I mean, you had all of these women throughout history that broke the mold. They broke the law of what could be possible for women. Onto the Renaissance, you had Mother Ursula, who was kind of like the female Nostradamus. You know, she was a seer and a priestess they called them magicians. Women owned and operated printing businesses. They were artists. There was a woman who was a female ninja. I love this. Chiome. Female ninja started a school for women ninjas, right? And they worked as spies during Japan's 1,000-year medieval period. Women composers and women poets and women artists, and let's not forget Queen Elizabeth. There were all kinds of women rule breakers. Ana Desoria brought quinine from South America back to Spain to treat malaria. Oh, and here's something. Women of the New World. Lady Mary Wortley Montagu Day. We celebrate it on May 26th, which is my birthday. She single-handedly saved thousands with her smallpox inoculation. She brought back to England from Turkey in 1719. This was 80 years before Dr. Edward Jenner invented the vaccine. And so when the epidemic jumped the Atlantic and came to the New World, it was she that inoculated all of our founding fathers. We may not even have a country if it weren't for her. She inoculated George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and the other signers of the Declaration of Independence. And there were women pirates. Talk about breaking the glass ceiling. Holy moly. Anne Bonny, right? And Mary Read, female pirates of the Caribbean. I don't talk about that either. Revolutionary War women called Molly Pitchers, right? They not only brought, I mean, in the stories in the history books, they brought water to the men in the field. They did surgery. They kept the cannons, you know, firing. They did all kinds of stuff. And Mary Young Pickersgill. She sewed the flag called Old Glory that flew when Francis Scott Key wrote the great national anthem. It's just that Betsy Ross had better publicity. But it was really Mary Young Pickersgill. So throughout history, women, this is not just for women, I mean men, you know this too, but throughout history, women broke barriers that were placed before them by breaking the law, but they had to break the law of their consciousness first. The law of consciousness had to be broken first. They needed to have that idea, embrace it, embody it, and before they can demonstrate it. Because manifestation is the last link in the chain of manifestation, right? It is the last link in the chain, is the physical, where things show up. So we have to have the new thought first. We have to believe it's possible. Even if we've never experienced it before, we have to believe it's possible. And then let the law work out the details. Ernest Holmes said, anything that you can dream is not too great for you to undertake if it hurts no one and it brings happiness and good into your life. It's in the Science of Mind textbook. And this is the lesson for all of us, not just women. Take heart, women. But it's not just for women, but it is for all of us. Anything you can dream is not too great for you to undertake if it hurts no one and it brings happiness and good into your life. We are capable of having that thought. We are capable of feeling what that thought feels like. We are capable of setting that intention, and then that intention manifests. We cannot let the voice of the world dictate to us what we can and cannot do, what we can and cannot have, what we can and cannot be. We must daily reverse our position in the law. Whatever the prevailing trend is, and you know, it's awful. A lot of the prevailing trend, a lot of the human race consciousness, oh my God, I mean, we'd all be running around, you know, saying the sky is falling if we bought into a lot of these trends. We'd all be running around with our tinfoil hats, you know. The sky is falling, the sky is falling. We must daily reverse our position in that law and not let the voice of the world dictate to us what we can and cannot do, what we can and cannot be. With that cautionary phrase that Ernest Holmes said, end hurts no one. End hurts no one else. We are here to experience life abundantly and passionately and fully and freely and expansively. We much, what is that, reach beyond our grasp? And the only way to do that is to imagine a greater life than the one that you're experiencing, a greater idea of your life that maybe it is not out picturing right now, but it can. We have to break the mold of our experiences and create a new mold for the law to fill. And then that is what out pictures. Ernest Holmes in the Living the Science of Mind again said, spiritual mind treatment, faith, the conscious use of law can do anything. Or else, there are some things that God cannot do. The limitation must not be in the law of our being. The limitation is in the way we use it. So it is our task then to break the mold of our experience, to break that same old, break your moldy oldies, right? Those molds of our experience, those things that we've been out picturing year after year after year, we have to grow a bigger mold. We have to grow a bigger idea of what our life can be. We can set a greater intention, something we've never done before. We can do that, but it has to start in mind. It has to start in our intention. Bigger, better, greater, deeper, more expressive, more expansive. Make your next thought a new thought, and it'll change your life. You'll be breaking the law, not really, you'll be breaking the mold of the acceptance from years and years and years. It might be that it's an old mold. We get to decide we've outgrown it. We get to decide to hold on to that new thought, to have that new thought, to place that into the law. And the law goes to work without question, out picturing what we put into it. So, that is your task this week. Make your next thought a new thought. Thank you.